So whenever Michael D. Higgins says anything even remotely interesting, you often hear people giving out that the president has gone too damn far this time. Well, what can the president of Ireland actually say? What are they restricted from saying? And what kind of rules are going to be on whoever wins this election in October, November? Well, let me explain.
Let me explain with Sean Defoe, a News Talk original.
Hello and welcome to the podcast, and don't forget to like and subscribe wherever it is you are listening. Also check out a few of the episodes of News Talk Daily. I was sitting in for Ciara Doherty over the last couple of weeks. We had some really good ones, a two-part series dissecting Golfgate 5 years on, the sort of history of it, the fallout, the anatomy of the scoop, how the two journalists, Aoife Moore and Paul Hosford, who joined me to discuss it, got the story, including the fact that a lot of it was actually broken from a Starbucks in Dundrum. So that was really interesting to listen to. And also another episode out this week about the generational wealth divide and why millennials are being screwed by boomers. You can find that in the News Talk Daily feed. This is News Talk's Let Me Explain, however. And today I wanted to talk a bit more about the presidential election, but also about what the president can say. Because if you listened to podcasts in recent weeks, you will know that so much of the president's life is restricted, that they can't speak to the Oireachtas without having their speeches vetted. They can't travel abroad without the cabinet signing off on it. And that there is always a row whenever the president weighs into political topics, discussion points. If Michael D has gone off piste to criticise housing policy or to talk about maybe less so Gaza, because I think there's a joint government position on that and everyone sort of agrees that what's going on is pretty terrible. But there have been other issues throughout his presidency where Michael D has given an honest opinion and ministers have instantly said this is outrageous and this is very bad for the presidency and all this sort of nonsense. So I wanted to find out what actually are the rules. What's in legislation? What is there in the Constitution that says the president can't say X, Y, and Z? And who better to do it than Dr. Jennifer Kavanagh, who has literally written a book, if not the book, about the Constitution, who is a law lecturer down in the Southeast Technological University. Jennifer, I think we're going to have to come up with some sort of a nickname for you for the TikTok generation, for the young, you know, law lecturer at Southeast Technological University is very good and sounds very professional and is very professional, but you know, Dr. Jenny with the Constitution, something like that.
Oh, I am never Jenny. That was my grandmother's name, so she had Jenny. You could call me the Constitutional Whisperer if you want to go something like that.
There you go. There it is. The Constitutional Whisperer. We will absolutely take that. So Jennifer Kavanagh, Constitutional Whisperer. What is there? What's there in law? What is it that the president can say and can't say? What does legislation tell us? What does the Constitution tell us?
So we have to kind of go back to first principles here about what they can and can't say. The reason why there's constraints is because the president is completely worked into all the different organs of government. So, for example, with the cabinet, he appoints the members of the cabinet on the advice of the Taoiseach. He's responsible for them getting their seals of office. He is also, or she, because we have had female presidents before as well, they are the ones that will check the legislation that comes through the Dáil and the Seanad to check that it's constitutional. So if they have any query on that, they summon the Council of State. If they don't like the answer they're still hearing, they can send it to the Supreme Court for a test of the constitutionality. And then when it comes to the judges, the judges get their seal of office off the president. So in all modern, pretty much Western democracies, we have this separation of powers where literally you can tell the Oireachtas get back in your box because they all have their three boxes. They're not meant to be interfering with each other. Our system doesn't work 100% that way because obviously if you're a minister, you are also in the Dáil, so you're part of making legislation, but they keep the judges so separate, they put them on the north side across the Liffey. Best way to think about it. So you don't want someone that is that interconnected being able to just go out and say whatever they want about everything, because there's the president's job is the constitutional checks, but also being the figurehead. And you don't want to have a president who has gone out so publicly on a particular issue that people are annoyed about and saying, well, this is awful, this is terrible. Because what happens when they have to sign the legislation, that they have pretty much said that they would not be in favour of, but there's no constitutional reason why they can't say it or they can't sign it in. So when it comes to those boundaries, we're not looking at legislation, we're looking at the constitution, because obviously legislation is created by the Dáil and the Seanad. It would be a bit, you know, quirky for them to start putting limitations on the office of the president. So what we have are the limitations that are there in the constitution. Because if you think of, say, a deck of cards, your ace is the most powerful. That is the constitution. Your king and your queen are like legislation, case law. So that's why everything is in the constitution. So when it comes to what they can and can't say, we don't really have a list like, say, the salient rulings of the Dáil. You can't call someone a liar. You can't call someone this, that, or the other, or use this terminology. It is more a case that if they want to summon the both houses of the Oireachtas to give them a dressing down or a talking to, the government gets to check that speech. Now, they get to check the copy that is given to them. Obviously, there could be, could you change the nuance here, that kind of thing. There's nothing saying that they couldn't just show up and give a totally different speech and catch everyone on the hop. The same provision applies if they want to get onto national media. They have a provision whereby they can go in and say, look, I want to talk to the nation. We had loads of that kind of thing over COVID. Again, that would be checked. But bear in mind that, as I said, the president's role is very much ceremonial. Listen, there's probably a pack of crisps that hasn't been opened in Kerry that somebody hasn't tried to have a speech around. So if the president is going down to open the new changing rooms in a GAA club, open the new prefabs in some primary school, they don't go checking those speeches because you just wouldn't be able to keep up with it.
Yeah, so it's basically they do have control or an element of control over what they say to the Oireachtas or in national speeches, but not those ones. So there, it doesn't say anywhere in the constitution that the president can't say X, Y, and Z. Really, it's more of a self-policing so that they don't put themselves in a bad position, but also that, you know, that they're representing the country well. It's not that they couldn't have an opinion on it. It's just it's probably good practice not to say it.
Completely agree with you. And what you have to bear in mind is the office of president has only been in effect since the 1937 constitution, because before that we were under the Commonwealth, so we didn't have our own head of state. Now, with the development of that office, all the ways up until Mary Robinson, you had like former Taoiseach like Eva de Valera, who would have been very quiet. And it was being viewed like the Oireachtas was a retirement home for politicians who had served the state well. Now, Mary Robinson changed that because she wasn't a political person. Now, she was a barrister. She had been a senator on the Trinity panel. She kind of ran an independent campaign first that got taken in by Labour. They said they would support her. So she was never one of those people that had a long duration, say the Dáil or the Seanad, or it acted in ministerial office. She was also a fantastic lawyer who knew her constitutional law and was quite prepared to push the boundaries slightly. And Mary McAleese did the same thing. Again, another Trinity Law lecturer. In fact, Mary McAleese was hired to fill in the job that Mary Robinson had vacated when she went to the Oireachtas. When Mary McAleese left the Oireachtas, then Ivana Bacsik got that job, apparently, and now she's in the Labour Party and running the Labour Party. So these were people who knew the constitution being lawyers and weren't inculcated into that culture of politics of, you know, being whipped through your political party, that sort of thing. So they brought that newer perspective to the Oireachtas or to the office of president. So Michael D, even though he had gone through the Dáil, he was a government minister, he was always very independent, though, in where he felt on different issues. So we've had three people in that office who've been quite prepared to say, well, yes, I'm the president, but I'm also a citizen. I don't sign a golden gag order when I go into the office that I'll say nothing and think nothing about politics. They have always been quite clear about where they were. However, here in a very diplomatic fashion, that they were saying what was self-evidently obvious. So say, for example, Michael D. Higgins saying that housing was a national crisis. I mean, everybody knows that. It's not breaking news. You know, water is wet. We do know these things. But in the way that they were able to do it, they were able to say, yes, I have taken the temperature of the nation and I know they are particularly annoyed about these certain issues. So they have the rights through the personal rights of a right to freedom of expression. So therefore, they have been trying to get that balance. And whoever goes into the office will bring their own stamp to what way they want to do it once they understand how important their role is within the constitutional setup of government.
Yeah, and that probably puts an extra focus on this campaign for the people who are running who don't have that knowledge of constitutional law, and there are several of them who are putting themselves in that position. So I suppose, like, I find this idea, and you always see it, when Michael D said that about housing, or when he said less so about Gaza, but you could take Gaza into it, or some of the other pronouncements that he's made during his time, ministers get awful pokey, and you hear these, anonymous quotes in the paper about he's gone beyond his remit and he's gone too far and all this sort of stuff. And you get quite a lot of the older journalists who have very stuffy views about this. He was and is the most popular electorally person ever elected in this country. So is there an argument to be made that all of this stuff about restrictions on what they should say, it should now be gone out of the window? It's not the 21st century presidency.
Correct. And you put your finger on it there with the older political correspondents who would have grown up seeing a quiet president. And we're all a product of the time that we grew up in, whereas people, the younger generations, are going, well, yeah, they have an opinion. So we have had candidates trying to run before, even in the previous presidential election. One of the candidates said, if I don't like the law, I'm not going to sign it in. And sure, that means then they're failing or refusing to do their job. There's a presidential commission will come in and act, and they could be impeached. And our impeachment situation is exactly the same as what they have in America. And bear in mind, the president is not answerable to the Oireachtas. So at the previous presidential election, we had queries coming up about the accounts for the Oireachtas. They had not been audited in quite a while. Michael D said, listen, we'll deal with this after the election because I don't want this to be the focus of the election. You know, that's his way. He's entitlement if he wants to campaign that way. And they couldn't bring Michael D before the Public Accounts Committee to answer for what was going on. The way things work in the background is the money actually comes to the Department of the Taoiseach. So the Secretary General for the Department of the Taoiseach was in front of the Oireachtas Committee answering the questions on, well, why is he paying so much money on flights, or what's going on here? So, you know, they can say what they want, but at the end of the day, unless whoever's in that office has caused so much trouble that they go, listen, the office is coming into disrepute here, we need to do something, they can push for impeachment. We did have the issue, Paddy Donegan and the thundering disgrace, when the then president was looking to refer, I believe was the Offence Against the State Act, to the Supreme Court. And that president decided, well, if you're going to start calling me a thundering disgrace to protect the office, I'll head off. So around that time period, we had a lot of change going on in the presidency because we had a resignation and we had a death in office as well.
And I that case comes to mind because if that happened now, I couldn't imagine a president resigning over something like that. There'd be a big controversy, but I just don't think it would get to the same levels of heat. And certainly I couldn't see Michael D, for example, resigning if, I don't know, pick a minister, if Heather Humphreys, just for the fun of it, had called him a thundering disgrace.
Exactly. Michael D is a very good man for being able to defend himself. So I'm sure that would have been sorted out. And there was actually rumours of impeachment back at the time when Sabine had a statement on the Oireachtas website. Now, it was the president's website. It was completely over the top because I remember talking to other people in the area who saw a senator was given out mentioning nearly going as far as looking for impeachment. People had to look up this particular senator on Wikipedia to find out who they were because they'd never heard of him.
Which hangs true for a lot of senators, it should be said.
Exactly. So if you want to get your name in lights as a backbench TD or a quiet senator, you know, over the summer when there's nothing going on and the president says something that sounds a bit off, look for impeachment because everyone then will know who you are.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, good way to get your summer attention. So just to maybe round out this particular bit of it, because one, we haven't really ever seen a scenario where the president has been massively politically at odds with the government. Obviously, you've had Mary Robinson, you've had Michael D, who were from different parties and gene pools to the governments at the time, although there was, you know, some crossover, the Fine Gael Labour government. But if there was the prospect of it happening. I think it could happen this time through Mary Lou McDonald. All of the usual asterisks, we've talked about this in previous podcasts, she might not run at all. But were she to run, she'd be a very credible candidate and obviously is the antithesis of Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil. So if there was a scenario that you had a Sinn Féin president who was very against what a Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil government was doing, other than mouth off a bit, is there anything they could actually do about it?
Well, whenever the president wants to test the constitutionality of legislation, it's the Council of State. Council of State is made up of various people, such as current and former Taoiseach and the like. So they do have to summon them. It's almost like the Council of State bat signal gets sent up from Phoenix Park. And while they do have to listen to them, they don't have to do what they're told. So therefore, they could start sending loads of stuff to Article 26 routes, which would slow things down. But there's one important thing about Article 26 is when the Supreme Court tests it, and if they say it's constitutional, the average person on the road cannot then challenge it themselves. So when you have the Article 26, it's almost like a student debating contest, because you're only looking at hypotheticals. You will see the actual problems when it goes into effect. So apart from that, that's really all they could do, and there would be a sting in the tail for them using that sort of procedure. But this is where the contest for the presidency and the role of the presidency are completely at odds, because we will have political debates between those who want to run for the presidency. So we'll have them all up at their podiums, you know, trying to counteract and talk over each other and the like. But it's not a very good simulation of how the job will actually work. So when it comes to the campaign, of course, it would be very good for Sinn Féin on a party political basis to run a candidate, because they get a soapbox on which they can give out about things, or any other party that's in opposition. They will have that guaranteed time to give out about things, poke holes in any of the nominees that are coming from the government parties. But you're not in that role as president doing any of that. So in a way, the fact that the competition has become so adversarial, it's not actually giving people a good view of, well, how would this person act if they are to be president? So we do have an issue with how the contest is being driven. I personally think this is why it'll come down more to one-on-one interviews with the candidates to suss out how they are under pressure, how could they answer questions, how they react. Because then you will get a better sense of, well, how will they act now if they're taking the credentials for the new Russian ambassador coming into Ireland? Because that, again, is a big role of the president. So it's maybe something we need to look at when we're looking at the campaigning. Are we running, are we seeing a campaign that is giving us a sense of what way the individual will act in the role, as opposed to when there's a microphone in front of them?
Yeah. So to sum up finally then, if a candidate got in who did want to mouth off all the time, technically they could. For their own political interest, they probably wouldn't want to. But there's nothing that can actually stop them other than a lot of giving out and potential impeachment.
Exactly. And remember, as part of the oath that they take, it's actually written down in the Constitution, their main job is to uphold the Constitution. So that is something that the voting public have to bear in mind, that while it's great to have a street fighter in the Dáil or in the council chambers, you know, I would love to actually nearly sit down and give all the potential candidates an exam paper on the Constitution to see how much they know about the Constitution, because that is 80% of their job, upholding that Constitution.
That sounds like a great podcast episode, actually. If we can get them all to come on and just do, here's your leaving cert of the Constitution from Dr.
No, no, they would nearly need degree level for this. It's not CSP.
Well, I look forward to listening to that. Jennifer Kavanagh, Dr. Jennifer Kavanagh of Southeast Technological University, the Constitutional Whisperer, the Constitutional Commissar, whatever it is we decide to call you in this, not Dr. Jenny with the Constitution, as you made quite clear. Thank you so much for coming on, Let Me Explain, and for making the Constitutional accessible, which is not easy for people with my frontal lobe. Thank you so much for chatting about that. Hope you enjoyed that particular episode, and Dr. Kavanagh is very good on social media. If you you want to give her a follow, who has lots of little nuggets heading into this particular campaign. That's it for Let Me Explain this week. Don't forget to follow, like, subscribe, share, all of that good stuff wherever it is you listen. And I will chat to you next week.